Hello, welcome to La Radio du Cinéma. Today I'm delighted to talk about a new short. The title is The Pearl Comb, and I'm very honored to be joined today by the director and star, Ali Cook. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing? You okay?
Everything's pretty okay. The first question I wanted to ask you before anything else is about VFX as well as design. A little bit straight up, maybe, but can you talk to us about it and how you put it together for the short?
For the VFX, yes, and the production design.
Indeed.
Yeah, well, the VFX were incredibly complex because the film involves a mermaid. And how on earth do you make a mermaid's tail come to life? Now, the first thing we had to do was a very detailed shot list, because that would determine whether we would use prosthetics, a prosthetic tail, or if we would use VFX. Now, for us, VFX made more sense because in every shot she was moving, so that meant the tail also had to be moving, just like, you know, with a cat, when a cat moves, its tail moves instinctively. So we had to go down the VFX route. And a lot of the VFX I don't think had ever really been done before, so we just had to brainstorm a lot with the VFX company. And the big secret is always to mix methods. So it's always to use a little bit of in-camera and then mix that with the VFX. So that was the real secret. As for the production design, I used a lady called Isabel Perillo, and we just hit it off. We knew exactly what we were both after. We were kind of after that creepy Victorian gothic feel, and also a very traditional look at what a small village would have been in the Victorian times, which, to be honest, wouldn't have been massively above medieval times, you know, in Britain. In the outskirts, where this was shot in Penzance, it would still be very behind the times compared to somewhere like London. And it involved looking at countless images online and then going through all of the prop houses in London and meticulously looking for items. And we took it from there. But I really have to give Izzy the credit. She did a fantastic job.
I want to talk a little bit about the romance in your film. What are the romantic elements that you're happy to discuss, and what do you think it brings to the storyline?
Wow, that is an interesting question that I've not been asked about the Pearl Comb, because, you know, the Pearl Comb is effectively a folk horror, but it does have a romance to it. And the romance is, it's an elderly, happily married couple, and they you know, there's that classic tension of couples who've been together for over 30 years, but you can see that they deeply love each other. And so there's a scene where the old fisherman is lured to the sea by a beautiful young mermaid who's trying to get him to go into the mermaid's sea with her, the mermaid's home with her. But what was really interesting, and what I wanted to do in this story, was here is a man who is not lured away by a mermaid. He would rather go back to his wife of 30 years and have a nice supper with her rather than be seduced by this young mermaid. And that was one of the big sort of twists, because normally in a mermaid movie, the man always falls for the mermaid. So that was really the idea.
The mermaid is, I would say, somewhat charming. Were you happy with the results and the idea of using a form of monster that is so known beyond cinema itself?
Yeah, because a mermaid is almost an archetype. It's something that is in Western culture, and it's been around for thousands of years. Interestingly, when I've been showing the film around the world, the mermaid doesn't exist in African culture, I found out, which surprised me, but it is in most Western cultures. And what I wanted to do, the traditional image of a mermaid that I think we're used to is kind of the Disney mermaid that we've all seen in, you know, family films. She's usually a princess and she's very kind of, she's very beautiful and quite, usually quite curvy, and normally falls for the prince or the young man. And it becomes more about teen romance, I would say. Whereas in this film, I went back to the original legends of mermaids, and mermaids were vicious vampiric killers. That is what I wanted to get across. And the actress, Clara Padgett, she did a great job. And she was alluring, and she was, of course, very sexy, but also you could tell she had a desperation and a little bit like an animal in the wild. If she doesn't feed, she will die. And I think she managed to get that across on screen. So in a way, I think I tried to portray the mermaid not in a Disney way, but in a more realistic way.
What are you hoping to achieve with such a modern story?
Well, that's a good question. It's a film that's very modern, but actually set in the past, in the 1800s, with it being a period drama. So what I'm trying to show in this film is the way women are treated and the way women are treated in the workplace. It's one of the big reveals in the story, so I don't want to say too much about it. But the film was loosely based on a true story called the Edinburgh Seven, which was the first seven women in Britain to become qualified doctors. The actual medical community actually tried to ban them from practicing. And I've since found out from showing this film in America that it wasn't until the 1970s that male doctors trusted women in America to be surgeons. And it's just crazy. Is that, to me, like, I'm not like a very political person or anything like that, you know, but I do like to point out absolutely ridiculous injustices when they exist. You know, I'm pretty sure I would be no better or worse as a surgeon than any woman in the world. And, you know, I was trying to point that out that in this film, that it's crazy how sometimes by looking at the past, we can see the ridiculous views that we have now.
And that also comes with a lot of teamwork to represent such a shift, and cinema also can achieve that. The idea that we should always see beyond borders, barriers, and sometimes habits. Can you talk to us about the teamwork with the film?
So, for many years in my life, I was a professional performer. I was an actor and a stand-up comedian. And prior to that, I was a magician on TV in the UK. And they are very solitary pursuits. You are completely self-reliant. You write all of your own material and you go and perform it. The beauty and the challenge in working in film is there's no way you can do even the most basic film without a great team behind you, because there's just too much stuff to know and you are completely reliant on your team. And the producers that I worked with on this, which was Stigma Films, they helped me concoct a brilliant team of people, and we all got on swimmingly, and pardon the pun. And what I think the way to do that is to have a very clear vision of what you want the film to be. And then my job is to communicate that vision in a very simple, direct way. And then everyone knows where they are. And I think that's really the big challenge with being a director.
You're also starring in the film. Was that something that was predetermined, or did it just happen like that?
Well, I'm an actor, so all actors want to be the star of their own project. However, I keep writing things where I'm not the star of my own project. And then I get to the end of the story and I think, what role could I do in this? So, you know, I always start out with yeah, I want to be the lead. And then by the time I finish this, the lead is a lady in her 60s, you know, completely different. But I also know, I think, what my strengths and weaknesses are as an actor. And one of the recurring roles I often get booked to play on British TV is that I'm often the condescending middle manager of something. So I'm very good at talking down to people and gently, but kind of intelligently undermining them. And it's just a natural ability. It's an awful ability, but it's an ability I have. And it's a type of role I'm very good at doing. So in this film, I play the highly educated doctor talking to this fisherman's wife. And all the way through it, he's very subtly undermining whatever she's saying to him. And I just found it very easy to do.
Do you expect it to be easy to travel?
Yeah, I think so. The film is traveling around the world already. We've played in Finland. I think we're doing almost 10 festivals in America. And we've been to Eastern Europe. And we've won the Méliès d'Argent Award, which is for the Fantastic Film Award in Europe, which is a huge thing for us. And a huge honor. And I think that it has quite a universal feel, because I think all women everywhere have often had that feeling of being undermined. And I think that that's one of the themes that comes through. And it almost doesn't matter if it's a fantastical tale like mine or a modern drama. I think that's what works. And I think that coupled with the slickness of the production. We have very high production values, and I think that's worked in our favor as well.
Do you encourage male identifiers to tell more women stories or female-led stories?
I don't try to encourage anyone to do what story they want to do. I think the real beauty of having the luxury and to be able to make any short film is that you get to tell your stories. Now, I'm a young boy from a countryside town who loves magic. So anything that I write has some sort of element of magic in it. But, you know, someone from some other part of the world that maybe their thing is, God knows, fishing, political issues, what I love, particularly when I go to film festivals, is seeing that variety. And I think we should encourage everyone's individuality, not trying to force anyone to do one type of story or the other.
Was it an intended choice to make a period film? I mean, it's such a high budget decision.
If you're going to ask the audience to believe in something fantastical, like a magical creature, like a mermaid, I think it's easier to do that if you invite people into a fantasy world from the get-go. So it's like when you're watching Game of Thrones. When you watch Game of Thrones, you're already believing we're in some sort of highly exaggerated fantasy medieval world. Therefore, if someone said, oh, and here comes the dragon, you'll more readily believe it. Whereas if you set a film now and you said, oh, there's a dragon, people are going to be like, oh, this is just too cheesy. It doesn't make sense. So for me, inviting the audience to believe a mermaid, I think it was easier for me to do that by setting it in the past.
Setting it in the past and also making it somehow charming and attractive. That's something I would love for you to talk about to our audience, the importance of monsters on the screen.
You know, when I was studying screenwriting, the famous book is Story by Robert McKee, and he talks about Hannibal Lecter. And he was saying that the worst villains in the world are the ones where he's a bad guy, he's going to kill you. The most interesting villains in the world are the ones that for some reason you're charmed by them, you're entertained by them, You may even empathize with them, which is the ultimate villain. The ultimate villain is when you completely understand their point of view. So, and I think it just makes for more interesting storytelling that the monster is possibly likable. And so what we have with the siren is, you know, she's incredibly charming. She's incredibly seductive. She's visually, you know, Clara, who plays her, she's also a model. So she's a very striking lady. And so you've got all of those elements going. It just so happens she can only live by living off blood. So in a way, she's kind of a vampire, really. And it has similar tropes to a vampire. Normally, when you watch a lot of vampire films, they tend to be very seductive, very good looking, and very charming. Because firstly, it makes for a more interesting villain. And then secondly, it is, of course, the tactics they use to lure in their victims.
In the film, there is also a lot of emphasis on dialogues. And that's something that also perhaps make it a little more period-like. How did you work with the rest of the cast, to achieve such a great result?
The dialogue in The Pill Comb is difficult. And I did a lot of research on old Cornish folk tales that are around the probably 1700s to 1800s style of English, which doesn't seem that long ago, but when you actually hear that dialogue, it's already very, very different to the English we have today. Now, fortunately, B.T. Edney and Simon Armstrong, they've done a lot of theatre and they've done a lot of Shakespeare. So for them, it was a walk in the park. But for me and Clara, we just had to do a lot of rehearsing. And also, whenever you use a slightly unusual or dated dialect, you just have to make sure that everyone understands the subtext of each line. And then once you've managed to do that, it will flow. And that's really the big secret.
Your film will be screening soon at Holly Shirts. What are you hoping for the Hollywood premiere to bring to your career?
Well, like everyone at Holly Shorts, I'm hoping we win the Oscar, I get Steven Spielberg's agent, I get to star in the next Star Wars, I mean, you name it. although I've been acting a long time and writing a long time, I've never really conscientiously gone to LA. So I think this is the first time I've actually sort of hit LA in the industry sense, really. So, and I think it's a great way to do it because we've got this short, and Holly Shorts is one of the most prestigious film festivals there is for short films. So I think the dream for me would be to get some kind of representation in America.
We wish only the very best for you. Thank you, Ali. Merci.
Merci. Thank you very much.